Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the meeting of the Plans Committee. A number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and a sound recording will be made available on the Council's website. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. So that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent? We're not expecting any fire alarm tests this evening, so if the alarms sound, please proceed to the nearest fire exits, which are situated to the side and rear of the meeting room. Toilets are available, and these can be found through the doors at the back and to the side. Could I also remind members of the committee that the next meeting is on the rescheduled date of Thursday, 1st of November. I've got some advice which I have to give to the members of the committee. Item one on the agenda is an application by Leicester City Football Club. The Council's monitoring officer has provided the following advice regarding interests in the application. Members of the committee who are members of the football club or have a strong affiliation with it should disclose a personal interest in the item. Councillors who, for example, purchase tickets occasionally to watch matches do not need to disclose an interest. Members of the committee who have an interest in the application should consider whether the closeness of their affiliation with the club could lead them to be biased or not to have an open mind. If that is the case, they should not take part in the consideration of the application. Right, apologies.
I've received apologies from Councillors Bentley, Fryer, Gaskill and Seaton, Chair.
Thank you. Minutes of the previous meeting. These have been circulated. Can we take them as read and approved?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you. Questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. We have no questions submitted to us. Item 4, disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests.
Chair, I'd like to actually be transparent here. The previous owner of the golf club was a neighbour of mine in Barrow, so I would like to, but I've come with an open line. He was only a neighbour. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. I have, on more than quite a few occasions, been to see Leicester City play, so it is just a personal interest and not prejudice. You're here with an open mind.
Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you. I have been to several functions at the said land, but I come with an open mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. Whilst I don't really follow football, both my sons are season ticket holders down there, so I believe I should declare that. And I've also been to functions at the golf club in the past, but I do sit here with a completely open mind.
Thank you. Councillor Snott.
Chairman, thank you. I have just a personal interest. I have been a supporter of Leicester City, I guess, from my youth. I've not been for some time, unfortunately, but I think I need to declare that. I also was chairman of the County Council, where I went to the end of when they won the Premiership, and I did attend that function as well. So I come here with an open mind.
Thank you. Anyone else? Nope. Thank you. Planning applications. We have two today. The first one, which is the one which most people seem to be interested in, is the Leicester City Football Club Limited Training Ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Before I start with the main presentation, I just wanted to draw members' attention to the extras report that was published last night. Just to run you through it quickly, it confirms several things in it. It confirms the position of environmental health at the Borough Council, saying they have no formal objections and they think that the proposed conditions will mitigate any impact with regards to dust, noise, air quality, lighting and contamination. The local lead flood authority has also been in contact, and the wording of conditions has been proposed to change. So we are suggesting amendments to conditions 15 to 18, the words of which are in the extras report. That doesn't change what the conditions were securing to deliver. It's just the triggers that have been changed. Our green space team have made comments, and this was drawn in the main report anyway, but what the main report did say is that we would confirm the actual wording of the conditions, and that's done in page 4 of the extras report. And then the extras report goes through all the additional comments we've had since the publication of the report. These were available on the Borough Council's website, as indicated, and they include a representation from Edward Argar MP, so the summary of which is set out on page 6. He doesn't raise anything substantively different to what has been raised by other correspondents, and therefore there's no new issues that aren't dealt with in the main report. The chair of Seagrave Village Primary School PTA has written in, raising concerns particularly around the school collection time and the impact on the highway. Again, it's considered highway matters are considered in the main report. We've had 5 letters from local residents raising points summarised, and we've also had a technical transport assessment which has been commissioned on behalf of the residents, the findings of which are summarised on page 8. In response of that, I have a verbal update for you. The Highway Authority have now looked at that transport technical assessment and confirmed today that, having reviewed the points raised within the MEC report, which was the report done on behalf of the residents, that they consider it doesn't change their position. They highlight paragraph 27 of the circular 02/2013, where it says, where the overall forecasted demand at the time of opening for a development can be accommodated by the existing infrastructure, further capacity mitigation will not be sought. And they highlight that because that's the case here. They also explain more technically the reasons why, but and I can read that out verbatim if needed, but the general summary is that their position remains unchanged to that reported in the committee report. The applicant has also provided a response to the transport assessment. And in summary, they've said that the report provides no evidence to suggest that the conclusions in the TA or the findings of the Leicester County Council or Highway England are incorrect, and the findings should remain the same as those reported in the report. Okay. Also, to verbally update you, the applicant has also responded to Edward Argar MP, but again, they just draw on the same information that was submitted with the application. The final bit in the extras report is comments by the applicant about their operational needs of the development, and they have requested some changes to conditions 28, 29, 30 and 31. As set out in the report, we consider that those amendments are reasonable and the amended wording is recommended on those pages. Finally, there is an amendment to condition 25 because that condition required information to be submitted, but the information was actually included in the environmental statement, so it's just a condition securing that tree protection measures are implemented through the construction of the development if approved. So if we just move on to the main application. The application has been brought to Plans Committee, as is the opinion of the Head of Planning and Regeneration, that the application is of significant public interest. The application is for the demolition of the existing buildings and the erection of a new football training facility. This comprises of grass and artificial turf pitches, multi-use training and ancillary buildings, including 30 bedrooms for players and dining facilities, indoor training pitch with associated facilities, show pitch with a 499-seat spectator stand, a multi-sports hall building, parents' pavilion, ground maintenance building, sports turf academy, security lodge, nine-hole golf course, a site plant and energy centre, and a combined heat and power plant. Then there's associated landscaping, hedgerows, trees and ponds, along with floodlighting, security boundary treatments, fencing and hard standing. The description is at the beginning of your reports. So if you can just take members through the location. The application site is approximately 75 hectares and comprises of the former Park Hill Golf Club and Fishing. The site is accessed from Park Hill Lane, which borders the site to the north. The A46 dual carriageway is immediately to the east of the site, with agricultural farmland to the south and the college. Sarbury Brook borders the west of the site. Seagrave, which is just here, is the closest village, located to the northwest of the site, with Sileby, which is here, and Thrissington, which is here, located further away to the southwest and east, respectively. There are two residential properties very, very close to the site, which I'd like to draw members' attention to, one of which is actually within the site boundary, the other one is in this location here. The application was supported by an environmental statement, the findings of which are summarised on page 12 and 13 of the report. Most members did visit site today, but just to jog some memories, I'll take you through a few photos. So this is the clubhouse looking out over the golf course. This is the maintenance and equipment building. There was the driving range, and this is looking forward over the driving range. These are a few shots looking down some of the fairways. As I explained to members on site, this is the fairway that looks towards the east, and the pitches would come up to the brook line with the rising land that would be retained as golf course. This area here is looking towards where the main buildings would be, and then this is looking back towards the driving range, which is towards where the show pitches would be. Looking at the access, this is the current access. At the moment, there is two accesses adjacent to each other. That is proposed to be rationalised to one access as part of the application, and there are gates boarding it and substantial hard standing to the next to the clubhouse. Here's some more pictures of the access. So this is looking east towards A46 out of the access, and this is looking west towards the application site. Members will also be aware that the application proposes the diversion of the bridleway. That's the application for a bridleway diversion is submitted separately to this, but it's shown on the plans. And this is the existing bridleway just off of Park Hill Lane, which we looked at again today as well. So if I just take members through the proposal. This was the original proposed master plan. That has changed very slightly through the course of the application, and I'll show you in more details in a minute, but that relates to this area here. So this is the final master plan that's being proposed. If I just run through some of the facilities that's being would include, the proposal will include 12 full-size football pitches, including 10 grass pitches and one external artificial pitch and one indoor artificial pitch, 6 park-size grass pitches, 2 artificial cage pitches, 2 goalkeeping areas, an attacking area, 5 warm-up and training areas, associated external goal storage and player benches. There's a sports hall. There's an indoor pitch building, which includes media and media and other facilities. There's the training centre that's got both first team and academy facilities in it, including training, changing facilities, training facilities, hydrotherapy, medical, rehabilitation, dining, education facilities, offices, 30 bedrooms for the players and managers, officers, offices and plants and back of house facilities. There's also ancillary buildings, including the security building and maintenance facilities, parent pavilions, and the ground maintenance machinery store and energy centre. The proposal would have 421 parking spaces, including 8 coach parking spaces, disabled parking spaces and electrical vehicle charging points. The application also proposes a sports turf academy, show pitch with a covered stand holding 499 seats. So this is it, just to help members. This is the entrance into the site. It's the same position, albeit altered to the existing one. And you come down to the indoor pitch here. The main training facility building is just here in this snake building. And you've got the energy centre just here. The sports turf academy is in this location, directly next to the show pitch, with the spectator stand just here. The pitches in this area will be predominantly for the academy, with the pitches at this end being predominantly for the first team, under 23s and under 18s. So I mentioned that there'd been a change to the master plan. This plan just shows that change. So the first one required the removal of part of the local wildlife site. So the local wildlife site is in this location here, and it had a small area being removed for parking and other purposes. It was felt that wasn't acceptable, and our ecologist did request that was reconsidered, and the application has been amended to make sure that 100% of the local wildlife site is retained and improved. So there'd be an uplift in the quality of that. What it has meant is that the show pitch has been pushed down slightly. So this is just an indication of the landscape plan. It's a master plan of the landscaping. There's actually a landscaping condition that would deal with the type of trees and mix and things like that. But as you can see, there's a number of additional planting areas and ponds going in. The other thing that's useful for members to just take account of is this red line here. That is the proposed security fence line. So this area just here, which is on falling land towards Seagrave, is outside of the security fence, and that's because of the visual impact. It's been pulled back. And also the bridle way proposed to go through this woodland here, which has been pulled away from that bridleway diversion as well. So to look at a few of the details that I'm sure members would like to see in more detail, this is the proposed alterations to the access. So at the moment you've got an access through here and an access through here. They would be closed, and a new access would be proposed down the centre. The wide grass verge to the north of the application site adjacent to Park Hill Lane is a registered common land, and the proposal would require obviously work to that common land in order to deliver the proposed access alterations. The alterations to the common land would result in a net increase in grass terrain and a decrease in hard landscaping, which is considered to improve the quality of the common land, and the proposed changes would not create any barriers to movements of that common land. The proposal also seeks to link the common land directly with the access to the bridleway to the north, which be considered a benefit as well. Separate consent is required for the changes in the common land, and an application for works for common land will need to be submitted to the planning inspectorate, but that's a separate legislative process. If we move on to the junction, the proposed junction improvements to the A46, the improvements include enhanced signage on all approach at arms to the junction, a widening of the central refuge to 15 metres to accommodate longer vehicles and cars in a safer manner, and the introduction of give-way markings and enhanced lining at the central refuge to formalise the turning movements and enhance visibility. The proposed alterations have passed a Stage 1 road safety audit, and the Highways England have offered no objections to it. So I'm just going to take members quickly through some of the buildings that are proposed. So this is the indoor pitch. It's a domed roof, and this will be the main areas, but the only, and then the main pitch. That's just an artist's impression of its final appearance and some of the materials that will be used. This is the training centre, and again, this is shown in the flat view, but it was curved, as you can see from the floor plans. And again, there's some images to help members visualise what it would look like once completed. Then you have the Sports Turf Academy. And there's other buildings such as a sports hall and the spectator seats. So this is a side view of the spectator seats and the long view just there and the plan view. That spectator stand also has toilet facilities as well adjacent to it. Then you've got the parent pavilion, which again, I do have an image to help members understand what it might look like. And you have the machinery and energy store, and then the security lodge. So that just runs through some of the built operation that's proposed. And then just to help members, because it is such a significant scheme, I've got some visual interpretations of what it will look like once completed. So this is the show pitch with the spectator stand and the Sports Turf Academy with the indoor pitch and the training facility in the background. Park Hill Lane is just here. And then this is golf course retained to the side. This is looking back sort of from Sowerby direction, if it were. So this is the back of the training centre with the sports pitch. Here's the Sports Turf Academy, and Park Hill Lane would run along here. It's just a further view up. So this is Park Hill Lane with the indoor pitch and the training facilities. And then you've got the pitches, the training pitches to the side and rear. And just some other views just to help members. The other thing that members need to be mindful of is the proposed floodlighting. LED illuminated floodlighting is proposed, and they've been very carefully considered by Environmental Health. The type of floodlights proposed have very little light spill, so this is the light spill diagram. As you can see, it hugs the pitches very carefully, and it's only those pitches that are proposed to be lit. And I also have some examples of lights on other pitches that have used this type of light. So this is from above, so you can see the light spill horizontally. It sticks to the pitch, and this is hard to see, but this is vertically. So this is the base of the pitch looking from the side of it. You can see there's very little light spill upwards. So the relevant policies are highlighted on pages 13 to 16, and other material considerations then continue to page 20. Statutory responses are summarised on pages 20 to 25 of the report, and other comments are summarised on pages 26 to 27. As I've already been run through, additional comments received have been set out within the extras report or verbally updated. So if I just run through the key considerations in turn, I'm not planning to go through the whole report because it is very detailed and members have been in receipt of that report, but I will run through the conclusions of the report. So in terms of the principle of development, policy CS1 sets out the development strategy for the borough and promotes development in the principal urban area, Loughborough and Shepshed, as a priority location for growth. The strategy for the countryside is set out in policies CS11, which promotes and supports rural economic development with a strong relationship with land-based industries, subject to the landscape character. Policy CS10 seeks to maximise the potential of the rural economy by supporting tourism and leisure facilities. And finally, policies CT1 and CT2, which do hold less weight given their age, but their context sets out the recreation and leisure facilities of suitable scale is also acceptable in the countryside. A proposal of this type and scale was not known or anticipated when the core strategy was developed. In that respect, the strategy set out in CT11 did not consider where or how a football academy or training centre of this scale might be accommodated within the borough. Nevertheless, policies CS11 and CS10, along with policies CT1 and CT2, set out the development strategy for the rural area. And notwithstanding that it might ordinarily be for a smaller use, the principle of the framework determining whether the principle of development is acceptable. The football academy and professional training facility, by their very nature, are leisure facilities and can be considered leisure-based industries, and in this respect, the principle of development is accepted. With regards to the loss of the football club, policy CS15 of the core strategy states that we will retain open space sports and recreation facilities unless there is a clear surplus to requirements or replacement provision of at least equal quality and quantity will be made available. The existing land is used for open space sport and recreation in the form of a golf club. The proposed football training facility would still be classed as open space sport and recreation. As such, although it's recognised the type of sport is changing, the planning balance must consider the fact that the current facility is being replaced by a new sports facility. Paragraph 97 of the planning policy framework states that existing open space sport and recreation buildings and land, including playing fields, will not be built on unless certain criteria are met. These include an assessment. One is an assessment has been undertaken which clearly shows that the open space and buildings or land are surplus to requirement. Two, the loss resulting from the proposed development would be replaced by equivalent or better provision in terms of quantity or quality, or the development is for an alternative sport and recreational provision, the benefits of which clearly outweigh the loss of the former use. The existing golf facility ceased operation in January 2018. The proposal would replace the existing golf course with a high-quality sports and leisure facility in the form of a professional football training centre, and the loss of the public access to the previously established sports facility on the site is considered to be appropriately mitigated through the community initiative and access programme proposed in Condition 34. Accordingly, it's considered the proposal complies with policy CS15 and the relevant paragraphs of the framework. If we move on to landscape and visual amenity, the application is within open countryside, and the site and its impact and the impact of the proposal on the character and visual amenity of the area and wider landscape has to be carefully considered. Policy CS11 confirms that new developments should protect landscape character by taking account of the relevant local landscape character assessments and should mitigate its impact on tranquility. After carefully considering the environmental assessment with regard to landscape and visual impact, it is considered the proposed master plan successfully provides a gradual transition from the rural edge of the application site into the more formal managed areas towards the centre of the site. These are required due to the nature of the use sought, whilst ensuring the character of the landscape character area is retained to enhance and enhanced where possible. Whilst it is recognised the proposal involves the loss of some existing landscape in terms of trees and natural areas, it is considered over time the proposed landscaping scheme would provide significant mitigation and would be capable of improving the area in the long term. The proposal is therefore considered to comply with policies CS10, CS11 and CT2 of the development plan. Move on to archaeology and the built heritage. Policy CS4 sets out the commitment to conserving and enhancing the historic assets and recognises the communal, environmental and economic contributions they make. The policy goes on to state that the development proposal should protect heritage assets and their setting. The site itself does not contain any designated heritage assets. However, the submitted environmental statement identifies a moderate potential for archaeological remains from the prehistoric period and a low potential for Roman and early medieval era. As you saw, those members that were on the site visit, extensive archaeological work and investigation has taken place and the archaeological evidence has been preserved by record. Accordingly, there's no objections raised with regard to the potential archaeological impact of the development and it's considered the development accords with policy CS14 and the framework in this regard. With regards to heritage assets in the vicinity of the site, the closest is Seagrave Conservation Area, and the closest listed buildings are located within that conservation area. Seagrave Conservation Area is located approximately 100 metres to the northwest of the site. It is considered the heritage assets of Thrissington and Sowerby Conservation Area and Ratcliffe College, which is a Grade 2 listed building, are sufficient distances away as not to be impacted on by the development. But the Seagrave Conservation Area and the listed buildings within it are significantly closer to the site, and the impact of the development and any subsequent harm needs to be evaluated. Views to the west of the site can be achieved from the eastern edge of the conservation area. This area of the site is not proposed to be altered significantly from the existing golf course and will not form part of the footprint of the training centre. Whilst the extent of the application site means only there is only approximately 100 metres from the boundary to the conservation area at its closest point, the proposed development within the site is predominantly beyond the top of the rising land. The development will therefore be out of sight from the conservation area. Artificial lighting will not be significantly different from that of the existing driving range, hence no greater intrusion. Visual impacts as a result of those proposed changes on the significance of the heritage assets within Seagrave Conservation Area will not cause harm and will preserve the character and appearance of the conservation area and the listed buildings within the location and their setting. And for that reason, it is considered the proposal will not have an impact, significant impact on the heritage assets, and the proposal accords with policies CS14 and paragraphs 189 to 202 of the framework. With regards to biodiversity and ecology, policy CS13 seeks to conserve and enhance the environmental. Just have a drink. Policy CS13 seeks to conserve and enhance the natural environments and support development that protects and enhances and restores biodiversity. The policy goes on to state that the Council will only support development that result in the loss of ecological or geological features in exceptional circumstances where the benefits of development outweigh the impacts. Adequate mitigation would be required where there is an impact on biodiversity. The site is within a very sensitive location with a number of protected species identified within the site. There is a local wildlife site within the application site boundaries and two SSSIs in close proximity to the site. Understandably, significant concerns has been raised regarding the impact of the proposed development on biodiversity and ecology. And the impact of the development in this regard has been carefully considered by officers. In order to construct the proposed development, the proposal would inevitably result in the loss of grassland, trees and hedgerows, together with some level changes associated with the sustainable drainage scheme. The environmental statement and supporting documents pitted with the application provide for a comprehensive land and landscape and ecology strategy to deliver a scheme which delivers overall betterment to the site. And this has been further improved by the amendments to the local wildlife site to make sure that there's no development in that and 100% is retained. After carefully considering all the submitted ecological surveys and information with the environmental statement, including its impact on the protected species, local wildlife sites and nearby SSSIs, it is considered the proposal would have an acceptable impact on biodiversity. Natural England have raised no objections to the proposal and on this basis considered that the proposal would accord with paragraph 175 of the framework and the provisions of CS13. The proposed development would result in the loss of 5,054 trees on site. However, the submitted landscape scheme shows that significant replacement trees have been incorporated within the landscape for the development. This will equate to 38,000 new trees being planted on site. The trees will be reprovided in more suitable locations, which will enhance the setting both of the training ground and the wider community, the wider countryside setting, and therefore is considered to accord with policies CS11 and CS12. With regard to design quality, policy CS2 and Save Policy EV1 of the development plan require that all development make a positive contribution to Charnwood through high quality, inclusive design and architectural excellence. Policy CS2 also requires all major development to go through an independent design review, and therefore prior to the submission of this application there was an independent design panel which welcomed the scheme overall. They concluded that they considered the scheme to be positive and exciting and was a clear opportunity to communicate a compelling narrative that can embody the values, aspirations and ambitions of Leicester City Football Club. It is considered that the proposed development incorporates high standard of design quality with the scale, density, mass, height, landscape layout, materials and access arrangements being well thought out and an appreciation of the site constraints and its location. It is recognised the proposal includes a significant change to the existing site. However, the careful design, scale of the buildings and palette of material is considered to be appropriate for the setting. The design is considered to be innovative and high quality. And for that reason, it's considered the application would conform with policies CS2, CS16 and EV1. Some concern has been raised regarding the security boundary fence and its visual impact on the surrounding area. It is considered the security boundary treatment has been carefully designed to ensure the solution blends into the existing landscape whilst ensuring maximum security. The proposed security fence is proposed to be dark green metal, which will be screened with appropriate planting to minimise its visual impact on the landscape. And whilst the fence will have a slight impact in the short term on the immediate landscape, following its installation, the surrounding planting will grow eventually and the screened fence is considered will sit comfortably into the environment. With regards to the highway safety and parking, a transport assessment and interim travel plan have been submitted as part of the application. And the local highway authority has considered the assessment and evidence submitted with the application and contained within the environmental statement. Their advice is that the residual cumulative impact of the development can be mitigated and are not considered to be severe in accordance with the MPPF, subject to suitable planning conditions as set out later in the report. In relation to the site access and highway safety, the Highway Authority confirmed that the proposed development would be served by a single point of access onto Park Hill Lane, which is a Class C road. The access will remain unadopted and will serve the existing dwelling as well as the training centre. With regards to the internal layout, the Highway Authority have advised that the internal road network will not be offered for adoption, but the internal layout and parking is considered to be acceptable. The Highway Authority view is that the proposed development, whilst generating a material intensification of trips in comparison to the existing use, do not consider it to be severe impact on the capacity of the surrounding county highway system. Significant concern has been raised locally with regards to the A46 junction and the level of junction improvements which are required to mitigate the proposed development. The applicant has proposed minor amendments to the A46 junction, as I highlighted earlier, and members were taken to that junction to have a look at it earlier today. Highway England consider the issues regarding trip generation and junction capacity assessment are acceptable, and the issue relating to the proposed scheme at the A46 junction is also sufficient to mitigate the development. They have raised no objections to the proposal and say that the proposed scheme will mitigate the development, the impacts of the development. On that basis, the proposal is considered policy CS22, policy CS17 and 18, which seek to manage the impacts of the development, are acceptable. And given the comprehensive assessment, including the advice of the technical and statutory highway consultees, the proposal is considered to conform with the policies. And it's not considered there are any highway reasons on which recommending refusal of planning permission could be recommended to you. Members are reminded of paragraph 109 of the MPPF, which is clear that development should only be prevented on or refused on highway grounds if it would have an unacceptable impact on highway safety or the residual cumulative impact of the highway network would be severe. And whilst the concerns of residents and parish are recognised, both the local highway authority and Highway England have indicated that they have no objections. Flood risk and drainage. Leicestershire County Council lead local flood authority has confirmed that the submitted drainage scheme is acceptable and it's not considered the proposal would have an impact on flood risk. Significant concern has been raised regarding the proposed foul drainage system, which I've set out in the report. The Environment Agency has confirmed that they have reviewed the additional information and are satisfied that the applicant has investigated the suitability of discharging into the public sewers and that the provision of an on-site packaged sewage treatment plant is a feasible option. It has therefore withdrawn its objection to the proposal. The Environment Agency has suggested a number of conditions which are included in my report. The disposal of foul drainage arising from the development is therefore proposed to be two separate packaged sewage treatments. And that would require a separate licence from the Environment Agency, but they've indicated that that shouldn't be an issue and they have no objections. With regards to the public right of way, the proposed diversion would result in the bridle way being diverted along the southeast, eastern and eastern perimeter of the site and would pass through an area of woodland to the eastern area. This will result in an additional 787 metres of accessible bridle way, which equates to 28% increase in the public access along its entire route. The proposed route has been designed in accordance with the Leicestershire County Council Development for Public Rights of Way guidance note. And in line with that guidance, the bridle way will be 3 metres wide with 1 metre grass verges either side, along with additional improvements. In planning terms, it is not considered the diversion would result in significant harm to the users of the bridle way, and the landscape and visual impact of the diversion is acceptable. The British Horse Society in Leicestershire, Rutland, and the Leicester and Rutland Bridle Way Association have indicated they have no objections to the development itself, and Leicestershire County Council Public Rights of Way officers have confirmed that they have no objections to the proposal and have indicated that it should not affect the public use or enjoyment of that right of way. It is considered, therefore, that the diversion of the bridle way moving closer to the A46 into the New Woodland area is acceptable and would create some improvements along that bridle way. Therefore, a refusal on this ground isn't recommended. With regards to common land, I've as explained before, there are amendments to the common land being proposed which will increase the amount of grass in that grass terrain and decrease the amount of hard landscaping. It's considered that this is acceptable in planning terms, subject to the other legislative requirements. In terms of impact on amenity, the area is within open countryside, within a tranquil landscape, and it's recognised that there are two residential properties which border the site, and the impact on amenity needs to be carefully considered. Due to the proximity of the residents and the land and the setting, we've considered the impact on amenity, and for the reasons set out in report, we think that the impact on noise, light, disturbance and overbearing impact are acceptable in accord with policies CS2 and EV1. In order to protect amenity, however, there are conditions limiting the use, and they're have been amended in the extras report and are in the main report as well. So, just to conclude, this planning application should be considered by applying Section 38 of the Planning and Compulsory Purchase Act, which requires it to be determined, having regard for the adapted development plan, unless material considerations indicate otherwise. To this end, the requirement to protect heritage assets from substantial harm and the principle of the framework are particularly important. The method of assessment contained within the environmental statement and other environmental information is considered to be sound and robust. The potential environmental effects have been appropriately addressed and can be adequately mitigated, subject to the recommended planning conditions and obligation sought. It is acknowledged that there is significant local opposition to the scheme, and this must be taken into account appropriately when reaching the decision on the application. However, this opposition to the proposal should be considered in light of the fact that it complies with the development plan policies and replaces an existing leisure facility, albeit with a new, larger leisure facilities. Concerns regarding the highway safety impact need to be considered in light of the professional advice of the statutory consultees. It is considered, for the reasons given in the report and the extras report, the proposed development would represent a sustainable redevelopment of the current site, which would not have a significant impact on the character or tranquility of the countryside. The amenity of local residents, biodiversity, flooding and other material issues are also considered to be acceptable. the proposed development would also not cause harm to the character and setting of the heritage assets within the locality. The residual cumulative impact of the development on highway safety can be mitigated and are not considered to be severe, and accordingly it is considered the proposal is in general accordance with the adopted development plan. It is therefore recommended that the application is approved in accordance with the conditions, well, first of all, in accordance with recommendation A, which requires a unilateral undertaken legal agreement to be received by the local planning authority, securing £2,970 for the replacement of the trees lost in the highway works. And then the approval, the grant of planning permission subject to the conditions set out in the report, with the exception of the amendments to the 10 conditions set out in the extras report. They are conditions 15, 16, 17, 18, 25, 28, 29, 30, 31 and 34, and the additional informative.
Thank you. That's been quite a big introduction.
We have a number of speakers tonight. We have two objectors speaking, one applicant, one parish council and two ward councillors. Each of these sections will have 5 minutes to speak, which means that the two objectors, Kylie Chapman and Alexander Bennett, will each have 2.5 minutes. Neil Adcock for the agent will have 5 minutes. Councillor Roger Brown for the Parish Town Council will have 5 minutes. And the two ward councillors, Councillor James Powland and Paul Murphy, will have 2.5 minutes each. The 2.5 minutes will start on here, on the green light. When it gets to 2 minutes, we'll have the orange light, amber light. Then when it gets to red, that must be the end of any talk or discussion that's going on. We do not allow any further talk. And it's 5 minutes. It'll be green for 4 minutes, amber for 1 minute, and red. And the red means exactly the same thing. You have to stop speaking. Thank you. Can we start with Kylie Chapman, please? Sorry, we seem to have two of you.
Chair, if it's okay, actually, we would prefer if Alex Bennett could go first.
You're going to let Alex go first, are you? Okay, 2.5 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Alex Bennett. I'm a director and shareholder at MEC. I have been commissioned to review the transport implications of the proposed development. Following a review of the available transport work prepared by the applicant, I feel there are a number of issues which require further attention. My points have been set out in full as part of a transport note which was formally submitted to the Council. My points are summarised as follows. The site is not in a sustainable location. No walking, cycling or public transport routes are located close to the site. This limits modal choice, placing an over-reliance on the private car, which is highlighted in the submitted transport assessment and set out in the committee report. Development proposals make no attempt to rectify the matter of sustainability with limited mitigation measures outlined in the submitted travel plan. This is contrary to the MPPF. The development proposals rely heavily on car sharing. Whilst it is accepted some car sharing will take place, it is considered the assumptions made within the transport assessment are overestimated. The principal reason for this concern is that selected football grounds used to formulate anticipated levels of car sharing are all urban-based and not representative of this rural development proposal. To compensate for the concerns over the selected football grounds, I feel the applicant should have undertaken sensitivity tests, assuming greater trip rates to identify potential impacts on the local highway network. The transport work is too definitive when considering the bespoke nature of the proposals. Concerns are raised over the assessment of the A46 junction. No consideration has been given to the anecdotal evidence that local traffic avoids this junction. Clearly, if this occurs, the same may ultimately happen for the development proposals, undermining distribution assumptions and resulting in wider impacts on the local highway network and surrounding villages. consultation with TRL, the company who develops the industry standard junction modelling software, considered the modelling approach suggested by Highways England to be incorrect and the original methodology in the transport assessment should have prevailed. This identified capacity issues with the junction shown to be operating at 154% in 2028 with development. This could result in further adverse impacts on the wider highway network or require additional mitigation. The model has also been modelled differently to other junction assessments with no explanation provided and no HGV percentages have been allowed for. Finally, we have concerns over the modelling parameters of some of the other junctions.
Well, if anyone is doing that, could they please desist? Thank you very much.
Chair, if I could just point out that the legislation does allow people to report or blog or other such things from meetings. By all means, you can ask for people to do it as quietly as possible, but it's not possible to ask people to stop.
Thank you. That's clarification. Right. Carly Chapman, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for allowing me to address you this evening. I appear on behalf of the Seagrave Village Group to highlight some key concerns from local residents. The proposal before you does not belong in this unsustainable rural location. This is an urban development simply dropped onto the countryside. This is not a leisure facility. It's a private commercial enterprise with limited and controlled public access. The principle of development in this location is wholly unacceptable and fails to comply with key policies of your development plan. The applicant seeks to negate this policy conflict by advancing the wider benefits offered by the scheme. Contrary to the MPPF, this proposal is of no social, economic or environmental benefit to the residents of Seagrave and the surrounding villages, those expected to tolerate the impacts of this development. The applicant argues that the loss of open space, sport and recreation facilities is acceptable on the basis that the previous facility was surplus to requirements. Sport England, a statutory consultee, has advised this council to consider this application against the latest data available. You are urged to place significant weight on the 2018 draft pitch playing strategy and the loss of the provision as a result of this proposal, which is contrary to the MPPF and your policy CS15. The community programme to be secured by condition will not mitigate the impact for some time, nor are residents able to assess whether the mitigation is sufficient. Residents have grave concerns about the traffic and highways impact, which has been advocated by the technical assessments of Mr. Bennett. This information is material to the assessment of this application. Residents have not been afforded an opportunity to consider the latest information from Highways England, the Highway Authority and the applicant, revealed and summarised just moments ago. You are urged to refuse this application, but if you consider you have insufficient information to do so, I respectfully urge you to defer this decision. Highways issues are legitimately at the heart of residents' concerns, and failure to adequately consider this information could render any decision this evening unlawful and susceptible to legal challenge. In conclusion, the proposal is contrary to the development plan and national planning policy guidance in relation to the principle of development in the countryside, the loss of open space, sport and recreation facilities,
thank you,
and the unsustainable location.
Okay.
Thank you.
Neil Alcock. Can you please press the
button? Thank you, Chair. In recommending this application be approved, the committee report addresses the relevant planning considerations clearly and robustly. I will not rehearse these here today, other than to make the following comments. Transport and access have been a focus of the design team throughout the planning process in recognition of strong local feeling about this issue. The project transport consultant Curtins has engaged with the Highways Authority and Highways England for almost a year to ensure an accurate and robust methodology is adopted and any appropriate mitigation is implemented. Potential changes to the A46 junction have been explored exhaustively with Highways England. The mitigation option agreed is both proportionate and appropriate. It will improve the existing situation to the benefit of all users of the junction. An independent road safety audit has confirmed the acceptability of the proposed arrangement. Curtins has reviewed the additional information submitted by the objector which regards to traffic impacts, which has informed their presentation today, and confirmed that this does nothing to change their conclusions. A framework travel plan promoting sustainable modes of transport has indeed been submitted with the application. Reference to 2028 is irrelevant in the determination of planning applications under national guidance. All of Curtin's analysis has been prepared using industry standard best practice methodologies agreed with statutory bodies. The information has been reviewed by the Highways Authority, Highways England and their advisors, ACOM. All are content with the methodology and offer no objection. The technical experts are all in agreement that the traffic and transport impacts will not be severe, and these views should carry significantly more weight than any single objector. The applicant is fully aware of the common land running along the northern boundary of the site and will build upon extensive consultations through planning already with the Parish Council with any application under the Commons Act progresses. The development has been designed by an award-winning team led by KSS Architects. It will not be an intensively used facility. Pitches are rotated and in use only up to 2 hours per day. Active professional management and the use of the latest floodlighting technology will ensure that this elite sports facility acts as a good neighbour to nearby residents. The vast majority of the site will continue as grassed areas and tree cover. Buildings comprise just 2% of the master plan, located in the centre of the site. The western part of the site, near a seagrave, remains virtually unaltered. The development will deliver some 38,000 new trees, a replacement ratio of 750%, together with retention and enhancement of over 11 hectares of existing woodland. There will be 28 new wildlife ponds and 14 hectares of new wildflower grassland habitats. The local wildlife site will be preserved in its entirety. The development will bring a world-class football training facility to Charnwood, one of the most advanced in Europe. The Sports Turf Academy, we believe, will be a unique facility. The club is absolutely committed to using these facilities to deliver community benefits to the local area. As a condition of planning permission, the club will deliver over 1,700 hours public access and community outreach programmes every year. Initiatives will be needs-based and will evolve in consultation with local stakeholders. Examples of what these will comprise are included in the officer's addendum report. In summary, these will include outreach to local children and young people, on-site primary and secondary school activities within the training centre, summer coaching programmes and education through the Sports Turf Academy. I'd note that Sport England have not objected to this application. Two full-time staff will be dedicated to delivering community programmes within Charnwood. The value of these initiatives will run well into the hundreds of thousands of pounds and will benefit from the LCF Community Trust's expertise and resources. In summary, the proposals are a product of a detailed and collaborative design process to deliver a truly world-class sporting facility within Charnwood. The facility will contribute to the Government's guidance in promoting sporting excellence, which in turn helps to foster civic and national pride. It will inspire youth participation in sport and increase health in the local area. The facility will help Leicester City FC continue to play a leading role in the life of the county and be at the forefront of the local community in Charnwood. The proposals have been fully and properly assessed by the Planning Authority. No objections have been received from statutory consultees. We therefore respectfully request that members resolve to grant planning permission in line with officers' recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Roger Brown. That's the one to your left. Thank you.
Thank you. In representing the views of the villagers, Seagrave Parish Council is opposed to this application in its present form. The reasons for this opposition have been set out very clearly and objectively in the large number of responses sent into the Borough Council. The focus of these objections is the very dangerous A46 junction with Park Hill Lane, the certain increase in traffic through our village, the lack of social and economic benefits to the village, and the severe detrimental effect on the environment over the next 20 years. We're extremely disappointed to note that none of the very well-researched and presented responses and suggestions has been included in the final decision document. The application is very complex and it takes a great deal of determination and commitment to read it thoroughly. But this is just what a number of our villagers have done, and their well thought out arguments are very persuasive. The traffic data provided can be interpreted in such a way that it could support any conclusion that was required. Models and data, however, count for little when compared with the daily experiences of those who use the junction. Also, the data will be distorted since many local residents either never use the junction or do so only when it is very quiet. I know that you've been to see the junction this afternoon. I'm sure you'll appreciate what we're saying. Construction of a flyover was deemed necessary in 1991 when the golf course was being developed, but this has been dismissed by Highways England as being unnecessary in spite of the huge increase in traffic volumes and speeds. And we suggest that the data be re-examined and this decision reconsidered. The proposal to widen the gap in the central reservation to allow a coach to park parallel to the carriageway will not increase safety. Since a coach accelerates much more slowly than a car, it will spend much more time in the central refuge whilst waiting for a long gap in two lanes of speeding traffic. This is guaranteed to cause a queue on the Seagrave side, and drivers will inevitably seek an alternative route through the villages of Seagrave and Sileby. The conclusion that traffic through the village will not increase significantly doesn't stand up to scrutiny. For example, the emphasis in the plan is on the stand and its 499 seats. There's no mention of standing spectators. And if there are as many as watch games at Holmes Park, the crowd size and hence the number of vehicles could double. Where will they all go when they leave? I suggest that it won't be to join a queue to get onto the A46. The road through our village is narrow, there's a blind bend, and there's always a number of cars parked along it. Our village school is on this road, which is therefore busy at drop-off and pick-up times, and we also have problems with HGVs using the road to and from the A46. Mitigation measures to regulate traffic on Park Hill Lane and Butchers Lane and Swan Street, which could be provided using Section 1A06 funding, are absent from the report. These could include vehicle-activated speed signs, rumble strips, speed humps, constriction points, such as those found in Sileby and now in Walton. The report only states that three trees will be provided at a cost of nearly £3,000. Some very sensible suggestions for amendments to the plan have been completely ignored in the LCFC responses, whilst others which could be easily included have been highlighted as listening to the residents. For example, the relocation of the show pitch to the extreme east of the site, away from the village, has received no comment from the club, despite the obvious ease with which this could be achieved, and the advantages it would offer, reducing noise and light pollution. This proposed development is a vast, closed business enterprise for the benefit of an elite few, replacing a small, open-access leisure facility and therefore cannot be described as replacing like for like. and will provide zero social and economic benefits to our village. The peace, tranquility and safety of life in the village are important to the residents of Seagrave, and we hope that you'll study the suggestions very carefully, since we put our faith in you to consider all this when reaching your decision and to honour the promises and pledges very clearly set out in the local plan. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Councillor Poland.
Evening, members. That's already on. Whilst I'm not against this application in principle, I'm greatly concerned that the obvious problems this application will cause, both in the village of Seagrave and at the A46 junction, haven't been nearly adequately addressed in this application. Given the lack of public transport alternatives, the reality is everyone accessing the site, players, staff, fans attending the games at the stadium, will all have to arrive by car. This will put more pressure on a junction which is already one of the most dangerous in the county, and the fact that by nature of the matches and training, cars will be arriving and leaving at the same time will further exacerbate that issue. In 1991, the Department for Transport said the golf club shouldn't be granted permission until a flyover was built at the site. That means that 27 years ago, the junction was considered to be so dangerous that extra traffic shouldn't be added to it then. Since then, the number of cars which use the A46 has risen significantly. I believe a flyover is needed now to ensure traffic heading south on the A46 doesn't block up the junction, as it surely will, trying to cross a busy dual carriageway, especially at busy times, and to ensure such traffic doesn't end up going through the village to avoid having to wait at the said junction. People who know the area well, myself, Seagrave Parish Council, Thrussington Parish Council, Ratcliffe on the Reek Parish Council, Edward Arger MP, Parish Councils of the Soar Valley Liaison Group, and scores of local residents are all saying the same thing, that junction is dangerous and the plans in the application do not adequately address the problem. If this application is granted today, I ask that the committee attach a condition that the flyover is built for that site to mitigate the dangerous problem of the A46 junction. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Murphy.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Plans Committee, for giving me the opportunity to speak. I'm Borough Councillor Paul Murphy for St Mary's Ward, Sarby, and I actually live on Seagrave Road. I've studied the application and the supplementary information very closely this morning. Whilst I accept there is reservations about the A46 junction, I still would like to say I recommend the approval of the officers this application. Myself and the parishioners of Sarby have some concerns when it actually starts work of the construction traffic. It says a construction environmental management plan, the CEMP, incorporating a construction traffic management plan, the CTMP, has yet to be approved before the start of any works. As myself, I am involved in heavy construction and commercial. I would ask, can all delivery tickets be printed with the approved route? Because as previously in the village of Sarby, we've had major developments where this has not happened, and we have had a lot of problems with heavy commercial traffic, construction traffic, not going through approved routes. Only on one of the sites did this happen, and it worked very successfully. Also, I would ask for signage. I understand that threats of prosecution for large fines cannot be imposed, but signage would help keep heavy construction traffic through the narrow, winding streets of the village of Sarby and surrounding villages. This is normal good practice for considerate construction companies. I would ask if this could be put into the report, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Right, members, I have two speakers up to now. It's three. Councillor Ransom.
Good evening, Chair. Thank you very much. I have got three items I would like to deliver, if possible. Please bear with me, committee. I myself, in principle, is in agreement with this item, but, and there is a big but, it is actually going to affect the villages of Seagrave, Cosseton, Salby and Barrow, which I'm one of the borough councillors, and my colleague, who is my fellow borough councillor in Salby. The traffic especially, when possible, there will be maybe 400 average cars at, when it's all built and up and running, attending any events. The villages could end up as rat runs to access the A6 and then onto the M1. Thrussington would also be affected. The village such as Barrow and Salby have had numerous developments with no mitigation of any sort of traffic. We have no mitigation of any traffic resignation in the villages. And we've had over, each of us, over 1,000 houses since 2000. Access to the A46 is very dangerous, which I do use it myself if I'm going to Thrussington, and I bless myself when I'm going across the Snicksnack. I'll tell you that now. Because the crossing northbound carriageway to either to go south towards Leicester off the crossing to Thrussington is similar, very, and when the access from the north via the southbound carriageway, this is very fast and straight road, and there have been accidents and near misses there, which I have been informed about, which I would like to be considered as one of the conditions that, and I know the actual Highway England have just said just widen the junction, but some of the form of traffic management should be put into. I would suggest if the flyover is not a viable asset, then a roundabout, traffic lights, or something needs to be put there. You know, just widening that is not going to be sufficient. Now, my second, I'm going to do everything, Chair, in one block.
Would you like them to be answered as
well? Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. With regards to the effect on the villages, obviously that has been considered by the County Highway Authority, who haven't asked for any effect, you know, any 106 to works within the villages. They say that that impact is going to be acceptable. We do recognise that on events there will be a higher amount of cars there, particularly all leaving at the same time, and that's why we've asked for an events travel plan, a management plan to be submitted, so that we can make sure that that is being managed and people are appropriately directed to the A46 away from the villages. With regards to the construction, again, there's a construction travel plan which we can insist that routing details are given to the delivery drivers that divert them along the A46 as well, and rather than go through the villages. With regards to the A46 junction, Highway England have been very clear with their advice. They do not consider that any more of an engineered mitigation strategy is required for that junction, and that these alterations would, you know, compensate for the increase in traffic in that regard. You know, they do run that road, and that is their professional advice. As you know, the SIL regulations don't allow us to insist on anything over and above mitigating the impact of the development. They can't fix an existing problem. They can only mitigate for the proposal that is in front of us. And Highway England's comments have been very clear in that regard.
Thank you for that. I'll say nothing on that objective. The other two items I would like to take up on block is when the lighting on the turf of the, when it becomes, if it does get passed tonight, could it actually, I know it's lead lighting, it's a more modern one, but I do know that out there is in the middle of nowhere, and you can imagine the impact on the village and on that lane is going to be colossal. but I believe I would suggest that the lighting be shone downwards and not upwards. That's other... Yes, thank you, Jacqueline. Do you want to answer that one?
Yeah, I will do that one. The lighting strategy has been carefully considered for that reason, and they're very directional lighting. That's why I showed you the light spill plans and the examples. They are very directional. There's not much light spill at all, rather than the floodlights you would be used to. And there's a condition to make sure that though only those ones are installed, so that no other ones are put in place.
Before you come back with your third point, could we show those photographs again?
Yeah. The example.
They're just photographs of examples of LED illuminated pictures so that members can see the difference between the ones that you'd normally expect to see on community pictures and things and these ones that are being proposed here.
Thank you. And my final, I will finish, honestly, Chair. The trees were taken out 5,000 and we're putting in 38,000 in various locations. Is it possible that we could put emphasise on the condition that they wouldn't be saplings, that they would be actually park grown when we come to that stage, if it is so minded tonight that this is going to be passed?
Okay, details of the trees that are going to be planted is in the condition. What members could do is put an informative on saying that that's what we'd be looking for as part of the details to be submitted if they were so minded.
Thank you, Chair, for your patience.
Thank you. Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a number of comments, really, and a few questions in amongst them. I do feel that I will support this application. I believe that the public access programmes we heard about will be an advantage to the local community, and overall it certainly will be an asset for Charnwood. The main objection seems to focus on transport issues, and we've heard, and I know the junction, have there actually been accidents at this junction? What do we know about accidents at this junction? Clearly, there seems to be consideration that there is. What do we know about that? And then if I can come back with my other questions.
Okay. The information from Highways England didn't include collision data. I know we're used to seeing that from the Highway Authority, but that's not the way that the Highways England does work, although they would have considered their own comprehensive data information when they considered the application. I have asked County if they have some data on the collision, and they do, but they did provide it with a caveat to say it's information that they've been passed by the Highways England. They can't say it is definitely accurate because it's not their information, it's Highways England information. The information that we were given were of the reported incidents were five minor incidents and one major incident in the last 5 years. But like I said, that has to be recognised that we've got that source from the county and not directly from the Highways England.
Thank you. Right, I'll carry on. As I understand it, it's one sports facility which is being replaced by another, albeit largely for private use. Can I ask what we know about the golf course? Was that an open access course or was it a member-only club? And do we know how many members they had and whether they've managed to find other clubs to play at? What do we know about that, if anything?
Okay. The 2010 open space study, at that time it was a private members club, but we do know from information more recently that at the point in which it closed, it had private members and was also offering a pay and play facility. So it did have that open access. I don't have any information about
the level of membership, and obviously it ceased in January before the application was submitted, so I've not been able to obtain any of that information.
Thank you. Right, the objectors focus on the site not being sustainable. I have to say, I don't really understand what that means in the context of this application. That's my comment, really. And do we know where Leicester City Football Club currently have their training ground? I'm really interested. Is that in Charnwood somewhere?
No, the current training ground is in Leicester City.
Thank you. I've nearly finished. My final comment really relates to what Councillor Ranson said about park-grown trees or saplings. I think if we do agree, if we agree it, and we do want to insist on some park-grown trees, maybe, but in my experience, saplings establish much faster than park-grown trees and don't need as much attention as park-grown trees. So it might be, I mean, clearly they cost a lot more and it may not be advantageous to insist that they're all park-grown. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank the officers for giving a very well-put, complex report, and I think she's done extremely well there, Chair. But just to clarify, there has been fatalities on that A46 at that junction. And I'm really surprised that Highways England haven't shared that information with our planning department and making that available for Ruth to see.
Please not clap or make any noises. If necessary, I'll just ask you to all to leave. You've got to listen to what's being said, and we must be able to hear it. When you're clapping, his voice is hidden. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It should have been shared, and I'm really surprised it hasn't been shared, sir. The way I understand it, because I was listening to Radio Leicester the other day, and they were talking about it, the way I understand it at the moment is their main training ground is at Beaver Drive, and their under-18s, under-23s train at, or are now working from Holmes Park. Now, the traffic survey that's in this report says that it took the numbers from Beaver Drive, not from Holmes Park. Can that be clarified?
I'm not a highways expert, but I can tell you what my understanding is. The TA has taken the vehicle and movements from the existing training facilities, but the methodology was agreed with both the Highways England and Highway Authority to make sure that the trip rates used were appropriate, and they've advised me that they were appropriate. So, you know, I don't know exactly the details regarding the technicality of that methodology.
My point there, Chair, is that if they're under-23s and they're under-18s are playing show games at Holmes Park, Leicester City Football Club, I believe, spent quite a lot of money doing up Holmes Park, so it's quite a show pitch. Now, that will double, if not quadruple, the movements of traffic into this new facility if it's not been taken into account on the original traffic survey just for Beaver Drive. Am I making sense there? Yes, I know. I'm sort of
making sense. I think you are.
I look at the application and I say, wow, I think it's absolutely fantastic. What a fantastic scoop for Charnborough Council to have this on our doorstep. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. But that A46 junction cannot take any more traffic. Seagrave cannot take any more traffic. It's got to be mitigated into Seagrave, and that junction has either got to be turned into a roundabout or lights, or the A46 has got to have a major speed reduction down to 40 mile an hour. I would have liked to have seen the original planning application, because I know it's been mentioned tonight that the original planning application for the golf club, there was a flyover mentioned. Now, if that's true, what was said tonight by a speaker, that the golf club shouldn't have been built, and that was a recommendation from Highways, shouldn't have been built until there was a flyover put in place. It was never put in place. If that was on the original application in 94, I believe somebody mentioned, then, you know, this is just a no-no. I can't support it on the basis of the traffic on the A46 and in the Seagrave. But other than that, I think it's a wow application. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Snodd.
Chairman, thank you. I hope you'll bear with me, because I've got a few things and I've got to find them through the papers, so I'll try and be quick. The first thing is about, I support about the replacement of trees. I think there's got a mixture of that, especially around the fencing. So we do need to make sure officers are aware of that in terms of where we go with that. We're talking about sustainability and the location. Could we just get an idea of how big this is from what the actual golf club was? What are we going to see that is making this still sustainable?
Sorry, can you just repeat the question?
Of course I can. Sorry about that. I wasn't very clear. What we've got is a new proposal, and what it is saying that we had a golf club there with a certain size and a certain people using it. How does this differ in terms of numbers, usage and impact on the local community? I think we've got to look and say there is something there at the moment, or has been. How does that go with what we're going to actually look at tonight?
Okay. In terms of the site area, obviously the volume of the site is the same, so it's not increasing into the countryside. It was all part of the golf course. There is a net increase in the built development on the site, but as we said, that's still relatively low. It's still about 2% of the whole site, but that is an increase over what the golf course was. In terms of vehicle movements, obviously it's very hard to say directly. The football club will have a day-to-day, will have a fairly static movement with people coming and going at different times of the day. There will be peaks when there is show pitches, that show matches, but the condition requires them to be limited to no more than 35 games per season. In terms of the golf club, we do know that the golf club had an events licence and did hold weddings and other events, parties and things, and their event licence allowed them to have up to 4,999 people on site at any one time. So you could... That's what their licence was for. That's what I've been, you know, I've been and read the licence. So,
could I just turn to one of the comments from against the proposal by other comments received, which is page 27, and it says the submitted documentation. This is one last but one, indicates that under 23 matches can attract more than 1,000 spectators. Therefore, the proposal for 499-seat stadium is insufficient, and the impact of more than 1,000 spectators visiting the site is unacceptable. Is there a limit to what we're going to propose tonight, or can we have as many as we like on that site?
The proposal only includes a spectator stand of 499 people. And the show games are ticketed events, so people don't just turn up to them, they are ticketed events. If another stand were to be proposed in the future, that would be subject to another planning application, which members would be considering at that time. But the proposal in front of you includes a stand for 499 people.
Can we turn now to the highway, which is on page, I think, 37. And this is where I have some sympathy with what's been said by my fellow councillors. And all on there is on the second penultimate paragraph. A review of the most recent five-year collision data has indicated that there's been one serious personal injury within 500 metres east and west of the proposed new access. There's no mention again, and I think we've brought this up before, about the collision data for the A46 junction. I think we're in a bit of a problem here because the Highways England and the Highway Authority are actually telling us that there's no issue there. If it is approved tonight, is there any way that we can give our message to Highways England and the Highway Authority that we have got grave concerns about this? I think it would be very difficult to against the professional view, but there is some indication, and it's been brought up several times, that there is a real difficulty at that junction. And I think we should actually, if it does get passed tonight, we should air that view by this committee. Could I just ask officers through you, Chairman, is there any way that we can actually do that, even if, well, if we actually approve this tonight, that we do show our concern about that and we can actually put a note in there and send it to the Highways England to do that?
Through you, Chair, if the members of the committee were minded to invite the Chair to ask me to write on behalf of the committee to Highways England and the Highways Authority, I'd be pleased to do that on their behalf, on the Chair's behalf.
I'm quite happy to ask that.
Thank you, Chair. I do think it's really bad that we haven't got that collision data, and just to say that we've got one accident outside the golf club, which is now, is in my view, not good. If I can turn to page 51 now. This is Highways again, and it's on the recommendations. I think the construction management plan, can we put in there that we definitely want all the construction traffic going towards the A46? I don't think it actually says that in the actual condition.
If members were minded, they could add some words in. So it says the construction traffic management plan shall include, as a minimum, details of the routing of construction traffic. You could add a little note in there to say to ensure it goes via the A46 and not surrounding villages. You know, just add that short few words in there and then carry on with wheel cleaning facilities.
I would certainly want that to go in there. I think the one thing on the highways again is, and I think one of my colleagues mentioned this, is the trip rates and how we have got that information that's going to go through the local villages. I'm just wondering if there is any way that we can show some signage or whatever to the routes, or give some indication of the way that we should get people come into this venue to go from the A46 and not through the villages.
Um, There is an event management plan which would include things like that and may well include marshals and things to ensure that happens. The application was submitted with a sustainable transport assessment, and that's been conditioned in as part of the condition two. But if members were minded that that is a live document, you know, the needs of businesses do change, and therefore we should have a revised one of those that take into these sort of things prior to the occupation of the development, then that is a condition that we could add in to ask for an updated sustainable transport plan to be submitted prior to occupation.
If I go now to page 56, 29, it says, once completed, the show pitches shall only be used. I thought there was only one pitch as a show pitch. It's quite important because it's different times with the lighting. Can we just check that it is one pitch and not pitches?
Yes, thank you, Councillor Snart. You're right, there is only one show pitch, and therefore the wording of that condition should only refer to pitch rather than pitches.
Finally, Chairman, you might be pleased. It's on the extras report, which is around the green spaces and access to it. I was a little concerned that it says this will include no less than 260 hours on-site activity per annum. I thought that was quite low, and I hope tonight that the they're listening and saying that it's such a super facility that we ought to be able to get the local communities more involved with more than 260 hours on site. And I just hope that people are listening tonight. This is a marvellous facility in terms of the site itself. It does have an impact on the local community, and I understand that. But here to look at the access to this facility by local, especially youngsters, I think that's low. If you're thinking about it, it's less than 1 hour a day. So I think it would be nice to get that. I know our people on the council have said it's okay, but I know that there's quite a lot of hours off-site activity, but I do believe that we should be looking and saying this is a community thing as well. And the local communities are taking a hit around this as well if it is actually agreed tonight. And I think it would be nice to put a bit more back than 260 hours. I don't think we can alter that tonight. I'll ask the officers, but I think at the end of the day, somebody will be listening and noting that. Thank you, Chairman.
Just come back on that. Just to explain that a little bit more, obviously it is a private facility and we have negotiated public access to it along with other community programmes to provide a package of community benefits. The condition sets out a minimum. It can be more than that, but our community spaces team were very keen to set out a minimum benchmark that they thought should be provided on site given the operational requirements of the site, and that the figure of 260 was what we came up with. What that doesn't include is, as part of the 1460, there's things that the Turf Academy potentially Forest School, so the two figures should be read together as the community benefit package, not just the 260.
I think we should be careful how you take that one. This will include no less than 1460 hours off-site activities. When you say off-site, are you including the turf, etc.?
Yes, because the Turf Academy can go out to community pitches and volunteers that maintain those community pitches and instill some of the knowledge to them that would upgrade the quality of community pitches by teaching them how to better maintain those pitches.
Thank you.
I just wanted one thing, and it's to do with the local community and the young people. And I think it's a real opportunity. We do have lots of problems with antisocial behaviour and all sorts of things within the communities, and this is an ideal place to show people, young people, what can be achieved. And I think the benefit around that would be enormous. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. Also have concerns over the traffic issue, especially the A46 junction. I share concerns already being raised, so I'm not going to repeat those. Note the lack of the public transport alternatives. Interesting, I actually previously lived in the proximity of the Beaver Drive training ground in Leicester. I do note that there was some disturbance there. I accept this is of a sort of smaller scale, but it wasn't substantial disturbance from the football club, which they did have to get the coaches up a minor residential road that was parked up on both sides. Other thing to note, I mean, the buildings are high quality design. That's a good point. Lighting, I have seen these LED floodlights in place. I will say they are a lot less intrusive than the previous old types of flood lighting. So I think that's a plus. That's something can be controlled. Security fencing. It is a concern, especially in these rural locations. I do see it is a condition of the planning consent, but I just ask that on this, there are different types of fencing. Some people prefer the more high security options. There are other options that are less intrusive. It is a rural location. Types such as paladin fencing is less intrusive on the countryside with careful use of landscaping. So I just ask that certainly is carefully considered as part of the if this does get approved as part of the approval, and have lots of consultations on that with the local council and the borough council as well on that. So I think that's really all I want to say to that.
Sir Gerard, recorded.
Thank you, Chair. Trees, could I request that a lot of them be native for in there if it does go ahead? And also, from the A46 down to the golf club, I didn't spot many streetlights. Could this be addressed as well, please? And also, if I know there's a sign to say go down, but if that could really be set up to, as a kind of warning as well, as guidance. Thank you.
You're correct. Park Hill Road is an unlit road. The Leicestershire County Highway Authority that are responsible for the maintenance and the operation of that road have not requested that lights be installed, and I think it would be hard to justify that this development would result in the need for fully lighting that road. The trees, yeah, I mean, the details of which are proposed to be included, and because of the ecological issues, I know that our senior ecologist will be keen to get native as well as locally native species in there. So that's something we will be looking at. The final thing is signage. Do you mean the signage for the bridleway?
No. As you come down the A46, you've got the green road sign. If something further back could be installed, you know, Leicester City training ground, take care, or, you know, something.
Okay. The details of what signing will go up will be Highway England as the responsible for the operator. What we do know from the submitted information is that enhanced signage on all approaches is proposed.
Thank you, Councillor Tassel.
Thank you, Chair.
this is difficult for somebody that doesn't live in the area. I live in a town where the roads were made for horses and carts, and I feel for the people of these villages. But looking at the site this afternoon, it's a fantastic opportunity, and to be quite honest, I wish we were going to have the opportunity to have it near us, because it would bring in, it would really bring in more footfall to our village, which we desperately need. But this afternoon I was looking and I thought, what if this doesn't go through tonight? It's a brownfield site. It's got a lot of grass around it, but there are a lot of buildings now that are becoming derelict. I looked into the club room. There's tables scattered all over there everywhere. Part of it at the back is beginning to fall down. It's beginning to become an eyesore. And sooner or later, somebody's going to have to do something with it. This is an absolutely fantastic opportunity, and I feel that it would be a shame if they put a housing development on it, which is just what I could see happening. I'm sorry to the residents, but this is just what I could see happening when they need to get rid of that site if it doesn't go through tonight.
Thank you. Councillor Babington.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I just have a couple of points, one of them fairly minor and the other, I think, a little more major. The first one is about there's been much talk about the loss of a facility and associating it in some way with this development. The fact remains that the golf club had closed before this proposal, and the closure of the golf club, as I understand it, had nothing to do with this development, and it would still not be there if this development had not existed. The second thing is a little more serious. Somebody mentioned earlier about talking to the software developer for the models that the Highways Authority use in modelling their roads, and basically saying that the Highways Authority had got it wrong in the way they did it. The response from the Highways Authority was, if my understanding was correct and what was said, was, yes, we did get it wrong, but it doesn't make any difference. I'm actually a little unhappy. Not a little unhappy. I'm very unhappy with that response, because if they got it wrong, then it needs just a bit more than saying, yeah, but it doesn't make any difference. And that, so I haven't heard that from anywhere tonight, so I'd appreciate if I could have a response from the officers about that.
Yeah, that's not what they said. Maybe I should clarify a little bit more. Obviously, the transport assessment did come late in the day. It was submitted yesterday, and the Highway Authority looked at it over the course of yesterday afternoon. Now, if it helps, I can read you their response verbatim, because I'm not a highway expert and I don't want to give you the wrong impression. So it says, we have reviewed the transport statement prepared by MEC on behalf of the Seagrave Villages Group with regard to the proposed football, Leicester City Football Training Club to be located at Park Hill, Loughborough. Having reviewed the points raised with regards to trip generation, car sharing and the A46 Park Hill Lane Seagrave Road Junction assessment, we consider our position unchanged. Regards to the comments raised by MEC with regards to trip generation, we note that there are only relevant for the assessment of the development impacts outside the normal network peak hours, i.e. when the show pitch is operating. As explained in the transport assessment submitted by Curtins in support of the planning application, the show pitch is expected to be used by the under-23 teams, which is likely to play up to 16 games per annum, starting at 7 p.m. on Monday nights, and therefore outside the network peak time. Furthermore, the under-18s under 16s and 18s combined are expected to play a further 19 games per annum on Saturday around midday. In addition to the above, we note that both the TA and the additional technical note prepared in response to Highways England's comments show that all the approaches of the A46 Park Hill Lane, Seagrave Road Junction would work amply within capacity in the opening year scenario in both weekdays and Saturday peaks. We consider that more robust model sharing assumptions... We consider that most robust modal sharing assumptions and adjustments to the modelling parameters would not lead to a significant difference in the results of the assessment in the opening year scenario. In particular, regarding the comments on HGV percentages, we acknowledge that the value of the vehicle mix grid should have been entered even if the model had been developed using PCUs. However, we do not consider this to be relevant in the case because, as mentioned in the TRL Junction 9 User Guide, Issue D, paragraph 58, this will only make a noticeable difference when the RFCs of the arm is close to 1, which is not the case in the opening year scenario assessment. Based on the above, given that Highways England purposes where the overall forecast demand at the time of opening the development can be accommodated by the existing infrastructure, further capacity mitigation will not be sought. Circular 213, paragraph 27. We do not consider the comments raised by MEC likely to change our position on the proposal.
Thank you for that. Unfortunately, I still have serious reservations. When we came from out of the road that runs past the development onto the A46, there was traffic turning right onto the A46. There is only space, as I saw it, for one car at the central reservation to join the traffic. And if you have, I mean, just off the top of my head, say a quarter of the vehicles turning right at that junction, that's going to make a significant difference. You will have people coming up there trying to get into the middle, assuming that the previous car is moving on when it doesn't move away. I'm not a highway expert, but I've driven for a long period of time and seen some risky roads in my time, and that strikes me as one of them. I strongly support Councillor Snart's request earlier to ask them to re-look at this, and I would add my support to that. Having said that, in terms of the overall development, I actually think it is a good development, and therefore I am going to propose that we go with officer's recommendation, with the reviso that. Thank you.
If I can try and assist members on this point, I think it's important to make it clear that Highways England and the local highway authority have been involved in this proposal from its original inception right up until yesterday, when Highways England responded to the late representation that we received from the residents group. I hear what members are saying about the need to invite Highways England, the Highway Authority, to perhaps reconsider the position. But I think Highways England and the Highway Authority are very clear on their position, and they have set that out, and we've provided that information for you in the report. Furthermore, Highways England has had the opportunity to reconsider, again, the evidence, and they've set out their comments to us, which we received this morning. So I think the evidence is there before you, members. Both the Highways Authority and Highways England are satisfied that this junction has sufficient capacity and can be safe. Asking them to reconsider it, I think, is unlikely to see a different outcome, particularly given the involvement that's been they've had in this process so far. However, if the committee is minded to express its concerns to Highways England and the Highways Authority, as I mentioned earlier on, I'd be happy to do that, to make sure that there is a record of your concerns.
Thank you for that, Chair. If Councillor Snart is happy with that, then I'm happy with that.
All I would like to add, if I may, Chairman, is that we actually put we were disappointed as well that there was no collision data sent to the committee, because there has been one serious accident and there's been five other accidents, and they are off-peak time, which is important as well.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll include that. There we are. Do we have a seconder for that motion? Just Councillor Gerrard. Still have Councillor Tillotson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Very quickly, it does follow on about the transport. Councillor Ranson mentioned some while ago the possibility of traffic lights. If we support this application, could we insist as a condition that the football club pay for traffic lights at the junction with the A46? And if that is possible, is there then potential to ask the County Council to make it so that I think it would be no left turn out of the new football ground, so that all traffic has to go, rather than through the villages, has to go to the A46? Is that possible for us to do that as a condition?
My professional opinion is that we can't insist on traffic lights. That, like I said, that junction is the responsibility for that junction is Highways England. Any amendments or alterations to that junction have to be agreed with Highways England. The scheme in front of you has been through the stage one road safety audit. No other scheme that we're discussing here has been, so we don't know what the likely implications are. Also, Highways England are clear that we should only be mitigating the impact of the development, not seeking to rectify an existing problem. Now, the proposal does include a betterment that would benefit everybody, not just the users of this in the improvements, but I'm not minded to say we can attach that sort of condition.
Can I just make a comment on this one? I was involved in Glenfield and the A50 on two sets of areas where there were many accidents going on. I mean many accidents going on. But it still took 4 years of negotiation with Highways Authority and etc. to get traffic lights put on those. And I can see no reason why, if we approve this tonight, that the residents cannot continue with their councillors to ask for traffic lights or some other condition to be improved on the whole thing. Just a comment. I've got Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I've listened to everybody, what everyone's been saying, but it sounds like you're going to pass this and blight these poor people's lives, you know. All them villages are chock-a-block now with traffic. You've heard about the so-called experts. Are we experts? Do they go through Sarby and Barry in the rush hour? I don't think so. We've not been told about the accidents that's been happening on the A46. I think that's disgusting. I can't give my vote to this at all. Thank you.
Yep. Councillor Tassel.
It's just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. Is there any S106 money involved in this that could help with this, with the alterations of the A46 and the lane up to the, and including the lane up to the entrance?
Okay, so the works, the improvement works will be delivered by the applicant directly through directly with the developer. So we don't need to have it in a 106. There's conditions in place to say that they can't open the facility until those improvement works have been completed, and that's both the improvement works to the network controlled by the Highways England and the entrance, which is controlled by the local highway authority. In terms of 106 money, it's actually a unilateral undertaking that has been proposed, which it delivers the same thing. And there is money in that for replacement trees, the trees that are lost in the highway. Now, the reason that has to be given to county to deliver those trees rather than being done through the alterations is because 278 agreement work, which is the work that developers do on behalf of county, can't include trees. It's hard physical changes, so that money for those replacement trees is being transferred to county so that those trees can be replaced.
Thank you. Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I totally understand mitigation. I totally understand that we can't ask for traffic lights and things like that on something. And I would support this application if we could do something with that A46. Now, I know your officers are going to tell me we can't do this, but could this be passed subject to Highways England reassessing that? But I don't believe they've got their numbers right. I don't believe the traffic numbers are correct, and I think they're way, way out. You've just given some numbers on an email, and I think you said 19 and 17. Well, that equates to more than 35 that's in this report. I don't think the numbers are right. Now, could it be passed, Chair? I'll support the application, support officer's recommendation, subject to Highways England re-evaluating and having another look at that junction on the A46.
I think I have to ask you to determine it on the advice you've been given. They have reassessed it. They reassessed it as early as yesterday, based on that information that we've received that questions the trip data. And they have been very clear that they are happy with the methodology and the trip data, and that is their final position. And their final position hasn't changed from what I reported in the committee report. So I think members do have to make a decision based on that advice.
Thank you. Councillor Gerrard.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just make a couple of statements. Jenny, you said no left turn as you come out. That has stopped the villagers accessing their own homes. I don't know what they're called, but they bring the pavement out one bit and then out, so it's like a chicane. Would that help at all? And I did a survey in Syston counting vehicles, and I know that Highways England cut off over 1,000 cars to which I'd counted, and they said they'd made the centre of Syston safer. Three accidents happened the day that they opened it.
Yeah, just to take members back to the advice we've received, the County Highway Authority has considered the impact on the local highway network. They've not asked for any chicanes or other mitigation works in the villages. They've been very clear on that. I've been back and questioned them, and they've said it's not required. What they have asked for is conditions to make sure that events when the trip movements are higher are properly managed, and that at that point they're directed, like I said, to the A46.
If I can come back on that, they will monitor it every so often they'll monitor the traffic through the villages and that from there. Sorry.
No, based on the information submitted and the transport assessment, they don't think that they've not requested any engineering works within the villages. What they have said is that the impact on the residual impact on the highway network is acceptable and in accordance with the MPPF.
Thank you. That was the last speaker. We now have a proposition that we pass this in accordance with the recommendations from the officers. There are two recommendations to make. One is recommendation A, enter into a Section 106 legal agreement or the receipt of a unilateral understanding which delivers a monetary contribution for trees. All in favour of that? We've got to come to that second one yet. I also have omitted to let my deputy chair have a say. Councillor Forrest.
Well, members, you know I always like to have my say. Before we get involved in voting for and voting against and getting ourselves in a tangle about what we're going to object to, I would like members to remember that we can defer, and it may be that in this case we would want to until we get some accurate figures from Transport Highways England, the local authority, about the number of accidents on that road. I live in Barrow. I know what a very difficult road it is. I'm not against this application. I think it's a wonderful application. But I do feel for the Wolds villagers, and I think we owe it to them to get some very accurate information before we can move, before we want to move on. But I now defer to the chair because, of course, we must take a vote, but I just want to remind members we can defer.
Thank you for that. Recommendation A, which is a straightforward section 106. All in favour? Oh, wait a minute.
Just so I can be my usual pedantic self. The recommendation as drafted includes provision for both a Section 106 legal agreement and a unilateral undertaking. During the discussion, it was referred to that it would be a unilateral undertaking. Would officers wish to change the wording of the recommendation, or are they happy that it works as set out in the officer report?
Unilaterals and 106s deliver the same thing. Normally, preference would be made to 106s where all parties are signatories. Given this is such a small amount and it's all being paid to county, a unilateral undertaking seems appropriate because of the scale, and that money then can be either paid to us to pass on to county or directly to county. The reason that it was left open is because we've not received any. We've not received one, and they'd both deliver the same. The indication is that we have seen a draft unilateral, which is acceptable to officers, and therefore that it's highly likely that it will be a unilateral undertaking.
We did ask for certain things, and I probably...
So that's coming up.
All right, okay.
Yeah. One point of procedure, and then I'll run through the elements which relate to Part B, because I think you will need to vote on Part A and Part B together. So if you just bear with me. In your extras report, there are a number of changes to conditions, some amendments and one addition of a condition that was left in your original report as to be clarified at the meeting. And I'll just get the numbers of those for you. So it's 15, 16, 17, 18,
25, 28, 29, 30, 31 and 34. And those are the ones that are set out in the extras report.
With the extra informative as well.
An extra informative in relation to that rides alongside condition number 34. The things that have been identified during the course of the meeting. Were in relation to the construction statement, wrong document, which I believe is set out in number 29.
No, condition 8.
8. And that was to include wording just to clarify the purpose of that plan to ensure that construction traffic travels via the A46 and not through the surrounding villages. On condition 29, it was spotted that there was an error in that it referred to show pitches when it should refer just to show pitch. Condition 2... although the sustainable transport plan has already been submitted, there is a wish to have that updated prior to occupation of the site. So I don't know whether that's a separate condition or an amendment.
It would be an additional condition to require the submission of a sustainable travel plan to be submitted and approved in writing prior to the occupation of the site.
And then the final one, and forgive me, I'm not sure what the number of that one is, the one that relates to the delivery of the landscaping scheme to include reference to that to a suitable proportion of the trees to be planted to be other than saplings.
I think if I can just clarify, it was requested that an informative be placed on it to just highlight members' wishes for some semi-mature trees to be included. That won't be all of them, obviously, it's 38,000, but a genuine proportion, an acceptable proportion of more mature trees in those particularly sensitive areas and native species as well.
Mr. Hopkins, if we do, may I have to make reference to this letter that you're sending to the Highways England about Arkansas and not putting the information on collisions?
Separate.
I thought we'd already agreed that, and it was going to be sent. It can't be put in as planning application or planning condition. But it's been accepted. Sorry, let's have a legal view on it.
It's just a small one, but just picking up from Councillor Starts, noticing the typo in condition 29. I wonder if I might want to suggest members might want to think about condition 31 and picking up on it, pictures again at condition 31, just for completeness.
Thank you. Right, so we're now taking both recommendations at the same time with the modifications as we've just discussed and just been confirmed. All those in favour? Against? Four. Any abstentions? Don't think so. Do we wish to take that count again? Those in favour? That's everybody's set now. Okay, thank you very much. So that's been approved. Thank you.